Today it's Japan, tomorrow it'll be another country, and before you know it, you know, they all fall down because fiat currencies are headed to zero.
Bitcoin is a fundamental change in the global order, and people don't think have quite realized that yet. Like, it is a rule you can't violate.
The United States may be able to take anyone individually one-on-one in a global trade war, but they can't take on Europe and China and Russia. You know, like,
vroom, vroom, man. Vroom, vroom. Can you hear it?
Warm.
Okay, can you hear the engines revving? I can, man. Loud and clear. If they're making a public announcement like this, then holy shit, brace yourself.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. As usual, I have Tony with me and special guest, Mr. Daniel White. Daniel, thank you for joining. Guys, let's jump right into the news here. Up first, Japan's prime minister says that Japan, their financial situation is worse than Greece. Things are looking bad and they are saying the quiet part out loud. I think we've all known this for a while. Daniel, why don't you give your thoughts on this first? What does it mean when you've got the prime minister of a sovereign making this sort of claim? We all know what happened to Greece.
I mean, I don't know if that was quite a direct quote. I do know that he was, the references around that were about the tax cuts and whether or not they should implement the tax cuts in Japan and things like that. And whether it's a bit of hyperbole on his part or not, I don't know. But I think for anyone that's been paying attention, you know, like, Japan's been near a crisis for about 20 years now. So I don't know if I put too much stock or weight into it. I mean, their debt structure is very different than something like Greece. And, you know, most of their debt is domestically held and they can print their own currency, whereas Greece was very different. You know, their unemployment is super low. Greece's was, you know, a quarter of the population. So I don't know if that's just a little bit of political posturing or if it was something to try and drive a point home or if they're trying to encourage something else within internally. But, you know, I mean, it's always funny to hear that kind of stuff. Like you said, they're saying the quiet part out loud, but I don't think it's quite buttoned up for Japan yet. I don't think they're, you know, on the verge of collapse. I may be wrong tomorrow, though, so we'll see.
No, it seems like they've been able to kick the can, and for a number of reasons, to your point. They're not even if they do believe that it's a worse situation, it's not, it's not a one-to-one comparison between the two. And, you know, Japan's a net exporter. They do have a big demographic problem as well, which is going to, I imagine, cause issues. At some point, I think the music stops. But to your point, this has been going on a long time. And we'll see. It seems like since I got into Bitcoin 3 years ago, like, there's 10 topics that people keep harping on and nothing's happened yet. But eventually, you know, it will. Tony, what's your take?
I don't know why they picked Greece, you know, as a comparison point. They seem to have pissed off a lot of Greeks. Because now you're insulting Greece, you know, because of Japan's mishaps. But, you know, I mean, like you said, I mean, they've kicked the can for so long that, I mean, at some point, you know, you're going to have to stop doing that and deal with the consequences of so many bad decisions over the years. And here we are. I mean, if Japan is bankrupt, you know, and how long can you keep the Ponzi going? You know, and it's not going to be the last of its kind to have to, you know, go through something like this. You know, now today it's Japan, tomorrow it'll be another country, and before you know it, you know, they all fall down because fiat currencies are headed to zero. It's just like who goes there first and who ends up being, you know, the last on the hill. But ultimately, they are going down to zero if they adopt Bitcoin as a standard over there sooner rather than later. Well, you know, they could have a first mover advantage, first mover advantage, so to speak. But, you know, time will tell how that goes. But ultimately, all countries, in my opinion, are going to have to accept the fate of the separation of money and state. It is happening. There is no way to stop it, whether you like it or not. You know, the genie's out of the bottle.
I wonder if maybe part of what they're doing is they want to be able to take drastic measures and they need to instill some sense of fear in the citizenry that, you know, when this time comes, we're going to print, we're going to whatever it needs to be. And if they haven't sufficiently scared everyone into thinking that that's an important action to take, they could have a lot of backlash. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not a macroeconomic expert. I listen to smart people talk about this, and I'm still trying to kind of piece together where exactly they are. But I have a feeling in the next few years we're gonna learn some things and figure out how this story unfolds. Alrighty. Oh yeah, do you have something else you want to say, Daniel?
No, I was just kind of agreeing, and you know, just I mean, if people have been talking about like the yen carry trade unwinding for 10 years now, and people are always talking about how bad things are going to get. And I think, you know, there's some merit to being prepared, and it can easily cross over into chicken littling, right? Or sort of endlessly. So, you know, waiting for whatever event and trying to plan for whatever event, I think it comes out of left field and most people don't see it coming until it's right on top of them. Bitcoiners are sort of a unique property in that mix because we just know it's coming no matter what. It doesn't matter what direction it comes from, and we're all sort of hedged against it, right? So however it unwinds, I think it's just going to happen, and they won't see it coming, and they'll all be sitting on their heels going, well, no one could have predicted this. And we'll all be sitting there going, we've been telling you for since Bitcoin was born this is going to happen, dude. So like you said, I think it'll be interesting. I also think there's a lot of wasted energy in macro anything just because no one can really predict the future, right? So
yeah, I think Tony would agree with that. Yeah. Tony's always railing on all the macro.
100%, man. 100%. As a Bitcoiner, you just have to sit on the sidelines and just watch the show. You know, no matter where it is, as long as you're in Bitcoin sitting on the sidelines.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing for you to do. You've already won.
Yeah.
Bitcoin in self-custody, the winning ticket.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We don't know what time they start, but the fireworks are coming. So, all righty. Speaking of, we got a nation going another direction. Panama introduces a bill to allow citizens to buy, sell, and accept Bitcoin freely anywhere in the country. We've talked about Panama a few times in the last, month or two. Mayor of Panama City is tweeting out about Bitcoin. You can now pay for public services with Bitcoin, I think, and Ethereum, but they'll sort that out soon enough when they realize that it's not very useful or worth anything. But I have to imagine that there's an element of like keeping up with the Joneses here. You've got El Salvador as a nearby neighbor, and looking at what's going on there and saying, you know, we've got to compete, you know, here in Central America. And I just wonder if that pocket of the world is just going to be like the next sort of utopian society. Like they seem to be making some of the right decisions. It's taken a little longer than I would expect, but exciting news. Tony, I'll let you take this one first because we've got Panama's near and dear to our heart at the Bitcoin Way.
Yeah, I love Panama. I mean, Panama is at the forefront of this game. It's very bullish what they're doing. I'm very excited on how things, you know, are going to progress over there. Being pro-Bitcoin, you know, this early on is extremely positive for the economy. I mean, they're going to attract, you know, like a good type of crowd, you know, into the country and hopefully, you know, bolster their economy and bring their way out into the spotlight, you know, an opportunity that I don't think they've had before up until now. And so public services are being paid in Bitcoin. The banks now can, you know, deal with Bitcoin, no problem. I mean, they're just like a hairline away of basically making it legal tender. And when that happens, you know, already people are paying attention, you know, it's a beautiful country. And the fact that you can live on your own terms and not having to worry about the headache of a tyrannical government always, you know, breathing over your neck is an extremely positive thing. You know, like, why wouldn't you move there compared to, you know, where you currently are if you're always stressed about, you know, unrealized capital gains and any other concoction they come up with? So I'm very happy for them. I hope a lot more countries, you know, follow that same model. I'm pretty sure they will. Central and South America, for me, are, you know, at the top of the bullish list. I think those countries are going to really come out, become like the Monacos of the new world.
Yeah, well said, Daniel.
Yeah. Well, I would echo those sentiments 100%. I know, I think a lot of people modernly kind of forget the Latin American debt crisis and just how they, like, crushed under the boot of the IMF and the global bankers that the entirety of Central and South America were. All through the 80s, 90s. And it was a horrible, horrible time to be down there. So when you start seeing countries like El Salvador or Panama or any of them even talking about Bitcoin, it's coming from a very different place than, like, if we're talking about our strategic reserve or whatever, because they have very recent, very relevant experience of what it's like to suffer under, you know, currency collapses and debt crises and having those impositions, you know, and the forced austerity measures and all that kind of stuff. So I think they have a much stronger, you know, place to fight from. But I think they're also very wary because they go, hey, man, we don't want to mess with these guys because they're dangerous and they'll come down and they'll start messing with us. So it's remarkable to see countries like El Salvador coming out of that and fighting hard and playing that game really, really sort of expertly in navigating those kind of sovereign issues and navigating, you know, like international banking and the IMF and the World Bank and things like that. So it's a sticky place for them to be because they're not militarily strong. Like Brazil's kind of got a little bit going on down there. But, you know, in terms of resisting U.S. influence, it's tough. And, you know, we're big trading partners for them as well. So it's a tricky road to navigate, but super encouraging. And like I think we were talking offline, you know, Panama is one of those great countries for a Plan B residency. And I know you guys are offering some services towards that, which I think is just outstanding. I'm always surprised that there aren't more that kind of look into that kind of thing. I know some of it can be kind of financially prohibitive for some of the lower order plebs like myself, but, you know, but it's always encouraging. I think it's great. And I hope they actually take the next step because, you know, it's that gradually then suddenly kind of thing. And you got one and they got another, and then next thing you know, you got 20, and it can happen a lot faster than people think, you know. And I think it's, those are green shoots is what we're looking at right there.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the fact that El Salvador sort of laid out a blueprint for how to do it is important. But you're right. Like on an individual basis, these countries have a lot less power than the United States. But it's sort of like the tariff conversation. A lot of people have talked about, you know, the United States may be able to take anyone individually one-on-one in a global trade war, but they can't take on Europe and China and Russia, you know, like all together, like they forge a coalition. And I think the same is true with, you know, Central and South America. The United States economy is still probably bigger than even a very large coalition of those countries, but it makes it much, it puts you in a much better position and posture to negotiate, and to resist, you know, any sort of economic imperialism or anything like that. So I'm hopeful they all just figure this out within the next year or two and then just band together and, you know, fight off the globalists best they can. So
the incentives will ensure that, you know, like it's not just that the rules of the games have changed. Now it's a brand new set of rules, right? So it's like, and those are rules that nobody can manipulate, corrupt, you know, and, you know, screw around with. That's the difference.
Yeah, it's a huge difference. I echo that 100%. And it's one of the core themes I sort of parrot every time I can talk to anybody that'll listen, as I say, hey, man, this is, Bitcoin is a fundamental change in the global order. And people don't, I don't think have quite realized that yet. Like, it is a rule you can't violate. And regardless of what gets built on top of it, what gets stacked around it, how people try and, you know, fuss with it and create little fiat games on top of it, at the core of the game is a fundamental rule that can't be altered. And that changes the entire game of competitive resource capture, the entire game of geopolitics, political economies, everything. Just like if you changed one core rule in football or soccer or American football or baseball or whatever, you just made one rule where you can't cheat, it changes every single one of those games fundamentally. And I think the South American and Central American countries are the most primed to appreciate that rule change and start adopting it rapidly because it changes the power dynamics in an enormous way, especially financially. So I think it's just a matter of time.
That's well said. TikTok next block. Can't change it. All righty. Up next, we're talking about Friends of Bitcoin. Now our arch nemesis, Jamie Dimon. Let's just watch this video here real quick.
Meaning Bitcoin, right? When
I look at the Bitcoin universe, the leverage in the system, the misuse of the system, the AML, the BSA, the KYC, the sex trafficking, the terrorism, I am not a fan of it. We are going to allow you to buy it, and we're not going to custody it. We're going to put it on statements for clients. So, you know, I don't think you should smoke, but I defend your right to smoke. I defend your right to buy Bitcoin. Go at it.
All righty. The evolution of Jamie Dimon. He's changing his tune. I think, because didn't he think that government should ban it sometime back? So he didn't used to defend your right to own Bitcoin, but now he defends your right. And so what do you guys think? 12, 18 months from now, he's going to be a maxi and they're going to have a Bitcoin treasury company, you know, subsidiary of JP Morgan. What do you think, Daniel?
Well, I think they get crushed if they don't. You know, I mean, you just look at what happened to Vanguard and you kind of go, if you're missing this boat, you're missing a monumental shift in global economics, you know. And the people that are embracing it, like if you see Larry Fink and BlackRock jumping on board and you're going to be Jamie Dimon and go, well, I know better than Larry Fink, you go, you're playing a dangerous game there, buddy. I mean, I know they're going to come in and try and do all their fiat games and they're going to try and do all their fiat shenanigans and try and control this and direct it. And, you know, and I think what eventually happens, you know, and I say this again all the time as well, I think the way those incentives influence people is more pervasive than they realize when they first get exposed to Bitcoin. And the example I always use is the personal example of, like, if you just look at Bitcoiners, if you look at someone who goes like, hey, I think I like Bitcoin, I'm getting into Bitcoin, and then they start going, I'm all in on Bitcoin. Within like 6 months, all of a sudden they're getting in better shape, they're eating better, they're, you know, like it changes everything about their thinking, the way they approach the world, the way they look at the world. And I think that is impossible to escape. I mean, once you get into a mindset of like, hey, I can save for the future, I don't get debased, I need to look at the world differently. And I think that's going to happen, whether it's to Larry Fink or to Jamie Dimon or to anybody, as soon as they get exposed to it, as soon as they get exposed to the philosophy and the ideas, and they just accept that, hey, the rules are a little bit different. I need to adjust my play style according to the new rule, not I'm going to impose some more rules that are going to try and dictate how this unfolds. I think the natural evolution of all these people is to become more productive, to be thinking in a more thoughtful manner, a more long-term manner. And that high time preference starts creeping into everybody that gets exposure to Bitcoin almost inevitably. So it was inevitable that Jamie Dimon was going to bend the knee. And I think you're absolutely right. In 12 to 18 months, Jamie Dimon is going to be singing a very, very different tune. And the fact that he's getting on board, even reluctantly, is, you know, speaks volumes. So it's inevitable, is my.
So do you think we'll know he's crossed the chasm when it's leaked that he's eating an animal-based diet and, you know, he's growing his own food and he owns a small citadel in the mountains of Colorado or something
and
like
he's
that?
He's snorting creatine and, you know,
that's right,
sunbathing his nuts and all that. Those will be good signs. He'll be part of Vibes Capital Management.
That's right. Tony, what do you think of Jamie Dimon and his progression?
Man, why are we giving this guy any attention? I mean, do I care what Jeffrey Epstein's banker, you know, thinks about Bitcoin? These people have been taught a very harsh lesson, you know, with all their arrogance and all their mighty influence that they thought they had, and they're going to dismiss it, and they're going to ban it, and they're going to forbid you from using it. All that big bravado resulted in what? You bend the knee. This is not your game anymore, my friend. These are a new set of rules where now you have no voice. You are just a regular player like everybody else, and you're going to follow the rules just like everybody else, whether you like it or not. And so the problem is when you're accustomed to stealing for such a long time, like you don't know what else to do. So when something comes along, you know, that like completely stops you, and no matter how many times you try to, you know, work your way around it, you hit a wall. Well, then, you know, you either join them at the end, right? Or you just sit on the sidelines doing nothing. And, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think any one of these guys wants to lose, you know, their wealth. They will lose their influence, but they could still preserve their wealth. So the incentives forces you to change your habits, no matter who you are. And that's the power of Bitcoin. You know, like, it's not the number go up, it's the freedom go up. It's the fact that no one can mess with it go up. That's where the value and the power of this network comes in. And so do I care what he thinks or anyone thinks? Absolutely not. You know, I care. TikTok, next block, 10 minutes. No one will screw around with this. This is what I care about. And this is what everyone who values their time and energy should make sure no one, you know, messes with.
Tony, you seem to enjoy ragging on these guys, but then you get pissed at me when I give them airtime. Like, I don't know what to do now. Like, you got me going, man.
You brought it up, so we might as well capitalize on the airtime.
Well, I think, unfortunately, Jamie Dimon's probably going to be in the news with respect to Bitcoin a lot in the coming years, because I mean they've got the pockets to make a big, you know, investment in this.
The problem with guys like him is that now that they're talking about Bitcoin, everybody will seem to forget about their past history.
Yeah, it's
and
true.
All the darkness that comes with them, because now all of a sudden they're advocates for Bitcoin. That's the part that really irks me, is that that's not how it's supposed to be. The person hasn't changed. So if you bring a tyrant and he just happens to say, I love Bitcoin, do you automatically forget everything that he's done? That's not how it's supposed to work. Remember who the individual is. That person will never change, right?
Yeah, I think the important thing is recognizing where you take your Bitcoin related guidance from, and I think that's a mistake a lot of Bitcoiners are making. I mean, Jamie Dimon's irrelevant to me, but I think there are a lot of people who have incentives to leverage Bitcoin in a way that's non monetary, or at least not in money the way that we often talk about it, and. I think you can learn a lot from a lot of different people with different perspectives, but I think there's a trap that many fall into when they listen to the wrong voices too loudly and too often, I guess I would say. So yeah, caution. Remember, anyone who you think is saying something smart about Bitcoin, go into their past and look at what they've said, and just make sure that they're they're well-intended and operating in good faith.
Absolutely.
Yeah, go on, Daniel.
Oh, no, I mean, it's funny. Like, even if you listen to that clip, he's talking about Bitcoin being used for sex trafficking and money laundering, all this kind of stuff. Meanwhile, Chase Bank is, like, one of the largest on planet Earth, right? So it's odd watching these guys shift gears like that. And, you know, you're absolutely right, Tony. Like, there's no, we should not be giving these people weight. And yet, you know, a large swath of the population, if I walk into a room and say Bitcoin good, fiat bad, people go, yeah, whatever, knucklehead, who are you exactly? Jamie Dimon walks in a room, says the same thing, people listen, you know. And I think anything that gets more people exposure to Bitcoin, gets people more comfortable with Bitcoin, I think is a net positive for everybody involved with Bitcoin, you know, regardless of source. And you're right as well, Michael, like if people are listening to bad advice, or they decide that, you know, ETF is a better way to get in, or this or that, or the other thing, you know, that's why it's important for us people like us to keep coming out going, hey, you need to self-custody, you need to run a node, you need to do these things to make sure that you get all of the benefits of Bitcoin that these people are now going to try and take for themselves, you know. And as long as you have your exposure, and you, as long as you got your foot on the train, you get to ride the train with them, you know, and we just don't want to leave a bunch of plebs behind. But even in that scenario, I think Bitcoin gradually works its way through the system in a way that benefits everybody, you know, and becomes a net benefit for everyone, whether they hold it or not, just because of that incentive realignment, because of that incentive shift, because of that incentive change. I think it has a much greater effect and impact globally than I think even hardcore Bitcoiners are giving credit to right now. So I may be proven wrong, but that's kind of where I sit on things. And yeah, I mean, Dimon can GFY as far as I'm concerned. And yet, you know, when you have powerful voices speaking towards positive outcomes, they go, well, it should be encouraged. We shouldn't forget that he's a scumbag and that he's FC's banker and that he's a money launderer and a criminal syndicate, the head of a criminal syndicate at the end of the day. And yet, you know, it's encouraging to me, at least on the margins, that I go, well, at least he's not crapping on it, you know. And
yeah, that's a fair point. Well, he's been a powerful enemy to Bitcoin, but we have to remember that he also has friends, and one in particular is the money printer. So the Federal Reserve, the Board of Governors of the Fed, released this just yesterday. I guess when this comes out, it'll be 2 days ago. Liquidity facilities, purposes, and functions, and they say in here, it's vital for a central bank to make clear that it stands ready to provide liquidity should stress emerge. And of course, they need to avoid moral hazard and blah, 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 which they've done so effectively and without fail over the last, you know, 20 years or so. This is, I think, the, like, again, saying the quiet part out loud, like they want to let everyone know that if there's stress, because they clearly see stress in my view, they're ready to stand by and print whatever they need to print to make it happen. Again, Bitcoiners are way out ahead of the curve on this. Tony is
room, room, man, room, room. Can you hear it?
Warm.
Can you hear the engines revving? I can, man, loud and clear. If they're making a public announcement like this, then holy shit, brace yourself. Because this is like when you have no moves left, you come out and say, well, you know, guys, you know, in case something goes bad, we're here. Don't worry. That means you're finished. You know, there's like a, there's, you know, they tried all the moves and now there's no more left. And well, I don't know what's going to happen, but I can hear those engines. So the money printer, you know, Bitcoiners have been calling on this, that it's imminent. There's no way around it. If you're going to keep this Ponzi going, you have to print. And your debt now is so exponentially high. Like, holy shit, man, how much do you have to print at this stage compared to before? That's the difference. So if you think inflation is bad now, just wait till that turbocharge button goes on to see how high it's going to go. Very bad news, man. Very, very bad news on those still saving in fiat currencies, or even worse, working for it. You are essentially working for free. You know, there's going to come a point where, you know, all the time and energy is for nothing. So it's very sad to say that, very painful to see that. But, you know, Bitcoiners have been sounding the alarm for, what, 16 years now? And, you know, some people have, you know, listened, but unfortunately, a lot have yet to pay attention. And for me, that's like extremely heartbreaking, because Bitcoin was created for 8 billion people, right? But where are these 8 billion people? Distracted, lost, confused, low attention span. God knows where they are, in another universe, where in fact they're supposed to be right here at the forefront of those paying attention to what's going on. So, we laugh at the money printer, but, you know, that's it. No more moves. Press a button. That's how it's always worked.
Yeah. Daniel, have you seen any of these, the M2 charts recently? I saw one, I think it was Joe Consorti shared, and it was Bitcoin price tracking, you know, M2. It's like I can't remember what he said, 4 or 8 years, it's like a 10-week delay. But like, you can just see like that M2 starts going up and then Bitcoin follows close behind. It's pretty crazy.
Well, I mean, I have seen those charts, and those correlations hold true for stonks and everything, really. I mean, any any tangible or solid or, you know, hedging type asset, whether it's gold, Bitcoin, real estate, stocks, it all launches with the money printer 100%. And so to Tony's point, like when you see this kind of playbook unfolding, you go, just in case anything goes wrong, not that we're saying anything's going to go wrong, but we're ready to print money just as much as we possibly can. That's a pretty good indicator that you should probably be stacking as many of those assets as you can right now. And I think a lot of this, you know, like the ETFs and all that kind of stuff, and the way they played that, I think was very clever in that they managed to acquire pretty large stakes. I mean, something like 20% of the accessible float is now under the control of these, you know, whether it's Strategy or Fidelity or BlackRock or anything. And I don't think they did that, you know, like willy-nilly. I think they spent a lot of time thinking about like, we're kind of behind the curve on this. We need to get this thing going, because they know just as well as everyone else, the stock market has been floating on waiting for when printer for the last 10 years. Because everybody knows the game is up. They've already injected so much moral hazard since the first bailout in 1983 or 87 to all the bailouts since. Everyone just knows. Like, you can bluster all you want. You can change rates all you want. You can say we're going to do tightening, this, that, and the other thing. Everybody knows, from, you know, the lowest trader at Goldman Sachs to the staunchest Bitcoiner. They know their printer's coming because they don't have any other choices. And, you know, it's unfortunate that there's going to be a lot of people that get rolled over on this thing. But to those people, I say it's not too late. You can still get into Bitcoin. And even, you know, even if you look at the people that live in like Venezuela or something like that, that are just getting crushed under inflation, people that just start right now and start buying a little bit of Bitcoin, they get better. You know? So even as people are starting to get stomped, I think the message of the Bitcoiner becomes much, much louder. They go, hey, you don't have to get crushed like this. There is a way out of this. It's right here. You can just go down and get something. You don't have to do anything. There are apps out there where you can just trade with people. You can go trade a pair of shoes and something like that on Vexel and maybe get somebody to give you, I don't know, however many sats or whatever, but there are ways you can start stacking right now. Go play RuneScape. You can sell your RuneScape gold for Bitcoin, non-KYC. It's not a super lucrative way to do it, but if you are really struggling, you got nothing else, you can go download RuneScape and start stacking some right now. All those little things are going to help protect these people as this inflation train gets unleashed, you know, and it's coming 100%. So
yeah, what a time to be alive. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up. Daniel, I want to give you a chance to tell everyone where to find your book. Tell them your awesome product that you've been working on. We're now a partner of yours.
Yeah,
I want to make sure we're sending people your way.
Yeah, you can check out the MicroSeed. It's a little titanium seed phrase storage backup device, but it gives you a lot of options. You don't just have to back up your seed phrase. You can do the Shamir's secret share encoding on it. You can do, you know, bank information, whatever you want. Super reliable, super discreet, fireproof, waterproof, all that kind of stuff. You can find that at 21e15.com. It's 21e15.com. You can find me at Daniel21e15 on Twitter. And I have a book available. You can buy it on Amazon. I'm trying to figure out another way to release it on Nostr again for free, just because I like people to read the information, kind of get exposure to some new ideas. All that stuff. Thank you guys so much for having me on. I'm just honored to be here, and I'm super excited to be partnered with you guys and trying to promote self-custody and getting people more involved in taking control of their sovereignty, taking control of their wealth. And you guys offer such a great service to help people do that. I'm super impressed with all the work you do and grateful that you exist. So
thank you so much, Daniel. It's an absolute pleasure having you with us, man. This has been fabulous.
Thank you.
For everyone listening, thank you for tuning in. Go check out Daniel. Go check out the MicroSeed. Awesome product. And he's got a great book out as well. And if you need help with Bitcoin and 100% proper self-custody, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We also help with online privacy. We can help you set up a privacy phone. And as I alluded to, we have a Plan B residency option in Panama, one of the Bitcoin havens now. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Gents, always a pleasure catching up. Daniel, good seeing you again. I'll catch you next week in Vegas.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
And Tony, I'll see you in a month in Prague.
Absolutely, man. Catch you guys later.
Cheers, bye, guys.
Everyone. Have a great day.